people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars, recording, as always, in Strongbox West in the beautiful city of Atlanta. We have four people around the table today. Let's do quick introductions.
Becca.
Bronnie.
Ben.
And this is Mickey. We have a pretty short agenda for today's episode, and I think we're just going to dive right in. And I'm going to start by saying, just telling a quick story about a fix that I did on the Mazda. Actually, I didn't do it, but what had happened was a problem that had been plaguing me for a while, which was air conditioning issues. And I cannot remember if we've actually talked about the full extent of this on the show before, but the air conditioner in the Mazda was doing this weird thing where you could drive it along for an indeterminate period of time, and then the air conditioning would finally kick in, even though the switch had been on from the beginning of the drive. And so it could easily be anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes into the drive, and the air conditioning would just finally start. And then I couldn't figure this out. I thought, well, maybe the clutch is slipping, maybe there's not enough fluid in it or something like that. I actually took it to a shop to get them to diagnose the problem, and they said, it sounds like your air conditioning clutch is going, it'll be $1,400 to fix it. And I'm sitting there looking at that thinking, yeah, there's no really clean way to get into that engine to remove the clutch in order to replace it.
And in Atlanta, it's really necessary to have air conditioning.
Atlanta air makes it really necessary to
have
air conditioning.
You have a black car.
So in this case, I'm sitting there looking at that price tag thinking I'm going to have to replace the air conditioning because this actual air conditioning shop is the person, you know, the people who made this diagnosis. So let's fast forward to time because I can't afford $1,400. I'm sitting here with our podcasting crew and we're at Ronnie's shop and I described the problem. And I said, you know, every time that what happens is I'll hit a small bump and it seems to activate the switch whenever I hit a small bump. And that's when Becca said, that doesn't sound like a clutch problem. That sounds like a switch problem or an electrical problem. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie said, have you checked
the relay?
The relay. I said, no, I haven't. Ronnie said, bring it in. And guess what happened? Ronnie opens the thing up. He literally just pushes down on the relay and the whole thing starts working. So that entire several weeks, if not months, of air conditioning problem was solved in the space of $20 and 5 minutes just out of a relay. And I have to give a huge amount of credit and a huge load of thanks to both Becca and Ronnie for diagnosing and fixing the problem, because now at least I have reliable air conditioning in the hot Georgia weather. Thank you, thank you.
Thanks yes, so you're quite welcome. I'm surprised you didn't bring it up to me sooner. I mean, well, at the very least, I can give any of you a verbal diagnosis of any issues. And customers, I mean, not to steal the format of, what are that, the two guys garage or two car talk?
Yeah, those are car talk, yes.
Yeah, not to steal their format. But if you want to call in or message in or whatever it is and ask about a mystery car problem, I'm happy to do a... you know, an over-the-air diagnosis of what you might be facing.
Yeah. Ooh, I have a Pontiac G8.
Stop.
Here we go again.
Okay, so I mean, that is true. We actually are equipped to do Skype calls. We've sort of experimented with it, and we think we can make it work. So even if you don't have an actual car question, if you want to just join us via Skype, let's figure that out. You were talking about your contact at Crutchfield.
Yeah, we had talked about Nemo, seeing if maybe he wants to call in and just kind of chit-chat, because when we were on the phone, more than half of our phone call was about just cars in general and not about the stereo I was installing.
Right. We should do that. We should totally schedule him next time we next time we do that. Let's move on with our agenda. Let's see what else is on the agenda. Let's talk about a question that we had fielded at one time. I don't know that we ever adequately answered this on the show. Is a torque wrench necessary for changing your spark plugs?
Can I answer it?
Yeah, what's the answer, Becca?
Oh my God, no! No.
But. Ben?
Oh, well, I've never used one either. But the big but there is, this is a talent that not everybody has.
Right.
It's just, you know, the feedback your hand is giving you as you're pulling on it.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, that might be a talent, though.
That's what I'm saying. Not everybody's got it. My brother doesn't have it.
Right.
So one of the things that confuses a lot of people is if you look at your spark plug box, it gives you instructions on what you should do in order to tighten it.
Right.
Especially in northern states, if you have any kind of rust or if you put too much anti-seize on the threads or something like that, finger tight becomes very relative, especially if you have particularly weak fingers or if you have monster mechanic fingers like mine. That can apply more torque than most people can break, you know, with their bare hands. That's why I personally, as a mechanic, always use a torque wrench on my spark plugs, especially for German vehicles, because when you have very long threaded iridium spark plugs with very tight tolerances, the box very specifically says 27 Newton meters. And I can guess at that, but the last thing I want, and a lot of you Ford people deal with this, is a spark plug that's torqued incorrectly and eventually rips the threads out of the cylinder head. And that turns into a huge job.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy I used to work for had that with some Fords. He had a, I believe it was an E350, you know, van cab chassis, you know, box truck thing. And he had several of his plug threads rip loose.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does make sense to at least get the data and control the way you're putting in the plugs.
Mm-hmm. But there are special tools also. Now, maybe you have a highly sensitive, detail-oriented torque wrench or something. Mine is made for bigger loads, if I'm going to torque down the wheels or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there are special tools made for spark plugs. If you have an issue with finger tightening or you don't want to just wing it, or if you're like me and your spark plugs are way down in there and you can't actually touch it with your fingers, there are special tools that are designed for the delicate work of trying to avoid cross-threading and things like that.
And one of my peeves with plug tools, and maybe I should look into the newer ones, is, you know, in the old days often I would use, you know, the first few cars I had that had plugs buried down between cams or whatever, you know, plug socket has that little rubber donut inside that, you know, keeps the plug in the socket as you're lowering it into some place like that. The problem I had was, okay, get those first few threads, try to pull it out. That rubber donut also makes the socket stay on the plug, and you just pull your extension out. Now you've got a socket stuck down the hole. You put the extension back in, but you can't get the socket out.
That's when you need one of those really good needle nose plier toolkits.
Right, right.
That some of them are really long for getting in somewhere. Yeah.
One of these was about an 8-inch hole, so you know it's way down there.
It's an art form, Ben. It's got to be an art form.
Yeah. I eventually learned if I put enough kind of twisting force on the extension and kind of leaned it to one side and jiggled it the right way, it would kind of pull it, but
well, cool. Becco, we'd written up the word light bulbs. You had something that's not quite connected to the torque wrench issue, but well, let me just ask. I'm getting ahead of myself here. I'm sorry. Let me ask: have you changed your mind about torque wrenches and spark plugs?
No.
You still don't think it's necessary?
No. Okay. I think that if either you or your car requires a tool that Ronnie's different. He's got a lot of experience and education with it, and if he can use the tool correctly without damaging anything, then that's great. Joe Blow working out of your garage, I'm going to say you're going to kill those threads on there. There are special tools designed to help you with that. Plus, some of the things that we were talking about, day one when you buy a new car, go out and get yourself that Chilton. Don't just go buy the spark plug box or, you know, what your Uncle Fred's roommate's dog rumor said.
Just in case someone doesn't know, a Chilton is?
It is a manual on how to work on your vehicle.
Yeah. And it's a pretty comprehensive manual.
They are. They're sometimes the only way you can get more information is to get your hands on the actual service manual from the manufacturer. But most of the Chiltons, they'll exclude heavy duty stuff, but they'll include what's already in that service manual. So just know what you're working with, have the right tools, and bigger does not mean better when it comes to getting your spark plugs in and out.
Right. Absolutely, yeah.
So.
Okay.
And then on the light bulb, that goes back to something you posted, though. You had seen it on Reddit?
I saw it on Facebook, actually.
Was it Facebook?
And I shared it. We have a private group that our podcast uses to, you know, just foster some behind-the-scenes discussions and planning for future episodes. And so I posted this picture, and this guy in one of the Mazda forums that I frequent posted a picture of what looks like an H7 or an H11 bulb or something like that.
I was thinking of like 9004.
Yeah, look, no, it was a 9006 or a 9007.
Okay. The sevens are straight. Anyways, neither here nor there.
And the question was, how do I get this bulb out of the socket? And Becca. Becca's doing a baseball, actually.
If you could see how I'm sitting, just trying to, formulate the words without frustration. It was the base of the light bulb. It's like if you were looking at a household light bulb with its glass dome and that silver base and somebody asking how to get the silver base off of it. It is the base of the headlight bulb where the electrical connector plugs in to, shockingly, no pun intended, give the light bulb power. And they wanted to remove the light bulb from the connector end.
It's sold as a complete unit. It's sold as a complete piece of plastic that happens to have a bulb hanging out of the end of it. And it's always sold like that. There is simply no other way to get this bulb, which brings up a valid point that Becca had raised. It's like, if you're removing the bulb from your car, shouldn't you already have its replacement in your hand anyway? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't that answer the question? But...
You see that it's a complete thing in the new package.
Right.
I'm sure the back of the packaging says...
But this person's like,
How do I
remove the bulb?
How do I remove the bulb from the electrical connector, basically? But it was a very bang head here moment that this person has a driver's license.
Well, I'll defend the guy a little bit. I mean, I was amused by it too.
Yeah,
but that's coming from the position of experience. You know, it may have been his first rodeo, as they say.
Yeah.
And he may not have known what he needed from the store, so he might have pulled it out to take to the store. And then,
if it's your first rodeo and you go out there and you can't find the saddle,
But he might not have been to the store yet and might not have known that that was the whole thing.
That is plausible. I have to say that it is plausible.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the culture, just general societal culture as well, where men are like, I could figure this out. And, you know, they just kind of go for
That's
it.
That's why cars were always disposable before the women were born. Just saying.
But if you are a guy, don't feel belittled by properly educating yourself before you give something the old college try. There are plenty of resources online. You now have a host on a show that you can message into or call to give you information if you are looking to find some.
Yeah, and it brings up another light bulb issue I had with a Volkswagen I used to have. There's a little light bulb in there somewhere that makes the temperature control knobs, you know, visible at night, makes the little tick marks on them glow in the dark.
The illumination bulb.
Yeah, you know, and that had burned out in mine. And sure, I knew where the knobs were. I'd had the car long enough I could operate them blind. No big deal, but... it just bugged me that they didn't light up like everything else. So I said, how do I change this? And I'm looking at it and going, gee, do I have to take this whole damn dashboard apart or something? Where is the damn thing? I'm looking at everything. I turn on YouTube. As it turns out, it's one of these stupidly simple things you'll never figure out by yourself. But there it was, right on YouTube.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and to Ronnie's point, don't ever be afraid to ask a stupid question.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it provides a moment of levity to the rest of us, don't ever be afraid to ask. Just ask it. Let us chuckle about it, and then let us solve the problem.
Unless it's a light bulb, just turn over the packaging. Okay. I know they're all arguing that you're driving down the road without a light bulb on, but that is actually illegal to do.
Well, here's the segue to the next item on our list is we'd written up on the board detailing Jen's car. Jen is going to replace all of her dashboard lights with blue LEDs. Mm-hmm. She's, over time, doing an R2-D2 themed conversion on her.
That's right.
So she's going to change all the bulbs out. But we spent a good part of one day detailing this thing. So it's a 1992 Toyota Tercel. She's the only owner. It's in really phenomenally good condition, all things considered, especially since it's not a garaged car. How clean we were able to get I'm going to admit it, there was a small ecosystem growing in the paint when we first started washing this thing. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the day, and we'll post pictures of this when this episode airs, how clean we were able to get it and what a noticeable difference there was in actually driving it when we were done. Mm-hmm. So we used, and I've got to plug them because I love these guys, the Meguiars. I used a couple of Meguiars products in cleaning and prepping this car and detailing it.
And I'm backing that one up as well. Meguiar's is one of the places I love to get stuff from. Yes, definitely.
I love the Meguiar's line of detailing products. But Jen said that there was a qualitative difference in the way the car felt on the road only after washing it and waxing it.
Isn't that weird how that happens? Your car always seems to run better once you wash it.
It turns out that you can actually pick up an MPG increase by washing and waxing your car.
More aerodynamic without the particles adhering to the
side. I
think
it'd be kind of a negligible one, but
it's measured like one or two, right?
I would think less than that.
It's kind of like, though, that male swimmers shave their legs because of the air bubbles that cling to the hair on their legs.
Cyclists do the same thing.
Yeah, it seems like such a small thing, but in the end, it's something that you can feel or see.
Well, the last thing on our list today is something that's been up on the board all day, actually. We should probably knock this out. And this happened. It's funeral procession etiquette, driving etiquette. And I think we're going to have diverging opinions at the table on this. I was driving down Georgia 400 once and following a huge funeral procession that basically had blocked up traffic over the course of dozens of miles on Georgia 400. And there was simply no way to get around it without becoming a complete ass on the road. And then there was one portion of Georgia 400 where one lane veered off behind a concrete wall, and you could actually speed up and get back onto Georgia 400 farther down, and a couple of us took the liberty to floor it just to get around this thing. On the one hand, I wanted to be respectful. On the other hand, this funeral procession was blocking up, I'm not joking, hundreds of cars by the time that, you know, I finally found my way around it. What's to do?
Well, how many lanes was the procession in? Shouldn't they be in some sort of line?
They were in one line, and they were in the far left lane.
Was it that nobody wanted to pass the funeral procession?
I think that was I can't ask my fellow drivers that, but because we were all in different cars moving 45 miles an hour.
Right.
But I think everyone was sort of unwilling and afraid to pass a line of cars in a funeral procession.
That's hard, because when we were off mic, we were kind of talking about it a little bit, and I am very big on etiquette and respect when it comes to funeral processions. But then again, that's on city streets. A funeral procession on a highway seems to add all kinds of complications to that. Because, it's meant for you to get somewhere a lot faster.
Yeah.
And you have a police escort, presumably, which these guys did.
And the cops are not going to leave the procession to pull you over.
Right.
Not to get on too much of a tangent, but funeral escorts are usually not actually police.
No.
They are private business. They ride police model bikes. They wear uniforms that look like police, but look closely at them. If you don't see a department name on it, they're not a cop.
Okay.
But many of them act like cops.
My
and they will jump off and hold their hand up and, you know,
stop or I'll put my hand up again.
No, my understanding is that they were off-duty cops that just do a funeral.
They may be off-duty, but if you don't see a department name on their bike or something, you know. Yeah.
Well, so it still doesn't answer the question.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to pass a funeral procession on the highway?
On the highway, I would say yes.
I would definitely say yes.
I think that highway changes it.
I think the biggest thing about a funeral procession is that you don't interrupt their flow.
Right.
And if they're all in their line, and if, I mean, I understand a funeral's, you know, it's a very hard time, but if you're driving like a scrub and you're messing everyone else's flow up in the funeral procession, like, stop being a scrub and just get in line and drive along. But that doesn't give liberty to block the rest of traffic, in my opinion, because when they're driving on city streets, they make their move, they cross through traffic. You know, everyone pulls over, be respectful that the procession proceeds, and then you continue along your way, because chances are you're not following the... I mean, Georgia's a little unique, where if you end up on Highway 92 or Highway 20, you know, you could be on side streets for a long time trying to get to where you need to go. But generally speaking, as soon as you let a funeral procession pass, you're probably not too far off from your destination, and they won't impede you any further. But on a highway, I think you have the liberty to pass them. And just don't mess them up.
Because the truth is, I don't know if there are any actual laws on the matter. You know, we just have a rule of like we've been saying, it's etiquette. It's just these informal rules of conduct. And the rules of etiquette, as far as I knew, on secondary streets, you pull over, you let the funeral procession pass. if you're a pedestrian, you stop and you take off your hat and you observe a moment of silence as the funeral procession passes. But if you're on an interstate and you're talking about 100 cars that are being held up because of a slow-moving column in the far left lane, I don't think that's right.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to, I don't know. I think I have an issue with the funeral procession just being on the highway. Because no matter what you do, if you want to avoid people messing with your flow, you would have to be to the far left. So you wouldn't have people crossing the exit, crossing the enter. Mm-hmm. But that person leading the funeral procession, I mean, they don't want to drive like a crazy person. Because for one, they've got cars following them. And then I have the hysterical visual image of what the casket is doing in my head. But, right. You know, they have to. But now you are blocking that fast lane. I think I'm having issues with the actual procession. I'm okay with them taking a hearse on the highway, but the long line, I have to wonder, is that really the best idea? Was it completely unavoidable? Could we have met at a better spot? And if the highway is on top of the destination, couldn't they have just done a loop around a couple of city blocks to look like a procession? I have a problem with it being on the highway.
And with the denser and faster, you know, traffic we have these days versus the old days, I think processions need to evolve a little bit. Yeah. Maybe not so much be a single block moving slowly as much as just kind of have a few core vehicles and then give everybody else a time to be at the graveyard.
Right.
Right, the immediate family or something does the procession. Well, because it used to be a sign of...
I've seen them really mess up local traffic, too, though.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But I guess so, like a sign of your clout or something. I don't know. That I've got a million cars.
Right. No, we shouldn't actually just fall in line and sort of gate crash the funeral procession. Is that what you're saying?
Okay, here's sure. How. When I die,
yeah,
my funeral procession needs to be at Road Atlanta.
There you go.
Okay, when I die, everybody just zip around that track.
So would you have objections to converting a Mustang into a hearse then? Putting that big old box on the back of it?
Well, I believe I'm going to be cremated. So
that's
problem
things.
Is moot. I will fit in anywhere on a Mustang.
Just put Becca in the cup holder.
You got it. Just don't drink me.
All right. On that note, we're going to call it a day. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Just a couple items of housekeeping. We are still trying to fundraise for better recording equipment, microphones, and maybe a new recording deck. Please find out the relevant venues for donating on our Facebook page or on our website, thethingaboutcars.com. On October 21, we are expecting to be at a C5 car show at the Brookhaven Arts Festival here in Atlanta. Please come say hi to us if you're there. We're going to be around for a little bit. It was a good show last year. We anticipate it to be even better this year. And I think that's about it. Am I forgetting anything else?
I don't think so.
Sounds good to me.
Coming to you, as always, from Strongbox West in Atlanta, this has been The Thing About Cars. Thanks for everything. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.